accession number 21129, Reel 1.
Well, I understand my father, he died in 1923, being gassed in the first war. He from Beverly. He's a Beverly man. I didn't know this till years after when I started working on the railways. One of the men I worked with told me about the family in Beverly, and I never knew till then.
And your mother?
No, then.
Well, it doesn't matter if you don't know.
I don't really know where mother came from.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a farm worker at Sandhole.
Sandhole, yes, that's it.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Howden?
I started Skelton School till I was 12. Then I moved to Howden Council School in Howden when I was 12 year old.
How old were you when you finished schooling?
1928.
Did you get a job?
I went to live with Auntie at Sancton in Market Wheaton. They had a public house there because I'd lived with Auntie Aunt Annie for a number of years after the father died. They had a small holding in Skelton. And when I was 8 year old, Auntie and Uncle, they used to take produce to Gold Market from Saltmarsh Station. On a Saturday, they used to load up the coal lorry, a horse and lorry, and take it to Saltmarsh Station, maybe 8 or 10 baskets, sometimes 12 baskets, for different shops and market stalls. They used to put me on the train and the baskets in the guard van, and the guard used to help me to get them off at the coal station. I used to one on each arm and go and deliver them round to the shops in Gold. The shops that go and to the stalls in the marketplace.
Did you?
And then I used to bring the basket back, and Uncle Joseph made me with the horse and rolly gold station to take me back to the town, to the uncle's place. Because he'd the coal business for Skelton, Saltmarsh, Laxton, Howden Dyke. He used to have the coal business for that in them days.
Did you join TIA before the war?
Yes, 1938.
Why did you decide to do that?
I was working for a firm building, Robinson Swords and Builders, constructors. I started at Arnsey with them and went to Gold with them. And when they were moving back to jobs in Hull, they asked me to come back to Hull. And one of the bricklayers said, "Right, if you're coming back to Hull, do you want to come and live with me and the missus?" That was in Walton Street. Well, across Walton Street was the barracks for the Armoured Car Company. And I used to see them. And I was talking to one of the chaps, and they said, about driving. I said, "I'd like to drive." He said, "Why don't you join the TAs, and they'd teach you to drive." And that's how I went one night with him and signed in 1938.
What was the unit called?
Armoured Car Company, But what number, I couldn't tell you.
What have you got any particular incidents that happened to you from that time?
We went to camp at Stockbridge for a fortnight. One of the funniest things later when I realised what had happened, we was in with on guard with a Corporal Crummy. And that was during the night. Next morning we saw the officers coming towards the tent that was guard tent. Corporal Crummy showed out, turned out the guard. Some of them half dressed, others were half shaven. Half shaven, and of course we stood there in the line, and the officers come to inspect us. Which was a funny thing. Anyhow, they didn't charge us because they knew it was a raw recruits.
Anything else that you remember happening pre-war?
Not really. Not appertaining to the army.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes. We were called up on the 1st of September 1939. You know, of course, for me, living just opposite the barracks, of course, I reported one of the first to report. When I came, from work.
How did you feel about the news that war had broken out?
Well, really, I'd not given it a serious thought about it.
What's happened next?
Well, of course, we called up, and we had to report each morning to the barracks, but straight to. The next day, we were digging trenches in East Park, in West Park, not East Park, West Park. We were digging trenches in there. Well, just opposite that West Park, it was Danse de Lux. Don't know if I remember it or not. A place called Danse de Lux. Well, they called us up and they moved us all into this Danse de Lux. The regiment, and then tanks, I forget what they call them. Anyhow, they had a few tanks, and they moved them into West Park, as far as I can remember. From there, there were some soldiers came, there was regular recruits. And a funny thing about it, I stood in Danse de Lux, and they six marched in and delegated to each squadron. And the two that came to our squadron, I stood again. I thought, oh, did you, that's Nick, Aaron Nicolay. He was my mate while I was farming.
What was his name?
Harold Nicolay, finished up with Sergeant Nicolay. And he joined the army in New York. And, of course, he was as surprised as me. To see one another after all that. I hadn't seen him for years, because he'd moved to York after finishing farming.
Which squadron were you in at that time?
C Squadron. And of course, from there we moved to Norton, East Yorkshire. And we was in Norton, the headquarters of Hemsley. I forget where the other two A and B squadrons were, but they were in that area. from there we were training on beaverettes. From there we were doing gunnery and wireless operating as well, you know, teaching us. And from there we moved down to the, I think it was just before Christmas, we moved down to Jalalabad Barracks, Aldershot, isn't it?
What did you think of these beaverettes?
Well, what could think about it? First thing, I'd been in an army vehicle.
What was your job at this time?
Learning to drive.
Drive a tank?
No.
Drive an armoured car?
No. Driving lorries. They put me driving lorries because I'd been learning to drive lorries. Well, I was, you know, in Walton Street Barracks. So I went into Iceland eventually. Anyway, after we'd been in Jalalabad Barracks, we got to know we was moving end of February to France. So I wrote to Dot, who was caught, had been caught in 3.5-4 years then. We was moving to France. I got to know this, so I wrote to her and said, would you like to get married? Within a week she wrote back, everything arranged, all register office, get leave. I have to tell them that I was supposed to get married, to get 48 hours leave, which was successful. We were married on the 10th of February. There's a message from the Queen. There's a message from the Queen, that was 61 years ago.
And
and that was the year when the big freeze was on, 1940, and all our vehicles were all frozen up. Anyway, eventually we moved down to, I think it was Southampton. Well, we went across to France. We was in France in March that year. Of course, it was all frozen up and that, there wasn't much doing. And we were just put into barracks. I think it was Le Havre where we landed. And then eventually we moved down to again Paris because they were going to give us leave. But before we got any leave, one or two got on leave. But before we got everybody on leave. Going on leave, we had to move back up north because the Germans was pushing through. And eventually, we got into Belgium, a place called Ath. From there, we were knocking about. I had a little 1500 weight. Lorry, and my job was supply petrol, go back to pick petrol up from HQ area, you know, Bear Long area. But I was attached to the carriers and tanks, Mark 6B tanks, I think they were. And I was with the, because some of them ran out of petrol, I had to go up to them and supply them with petrol, and they might be miles away, you know, 5 or 6 miles away, maybe. And yeah, we had a quartermaster sergeant Charlton. He was with me all the time. Funny thing, he couldn't drive. A quartermaster, he couldn't drive. And we were supplying them once, and they came up to me, the second in command of the squadron. And he said, "How much petrol have you got on Adams?" I said, "I've only 2 tins left," which were 2 4-gallon tins. He said, "Well, go back to this reference and take the quartermaster with you and go to this reference and fill up again." Well, I got to this reference, to proper chaos. They said, "What are you doing here?" Reported, tell them what you're doing here. So I got to fill up with tins of petrol again for the carriers. They said, "We haven't had any petrol on store." He said, "You and the quartermaster sergeant," he says, "make for Dunkirk, because we're pulling out here and we haven't any petrol in store." An incident before that, though, was lagged up with the echelon before, I think it must have been the Eastermath. I can't remember the name. It was in a farmhouse with about six big lorries and 2 or 3 15-ton lorries. And we could hear the firing and shooting. And yeah, the captain said, we better get moving over. We just got out of it when they started firing on the farm out. So we nearly got caught there. Anyway, when we got back to the to us around there, Hill 160, that's where it was, Hill 160. When we were moving back to Dunkirk, we were all separated. I got to an area where all the roads were all blocked with vehicles, and trucks, tanks, everything. And what caused it was this big backlog, nobody could move. What it caused it was a naval gun that the Belgians had mounted, and they'd been trying to come out of a side road onto the main road to Dunkirk. It had toppled over, one of the wheels had broken, and you just left it there. And cleared off, and it was right across the big naval gun, was right across the road blocking it. That's why there was a backlog of traffic, couldn't get moving. Because everybody was abandoning the vehicles and walking the rest of the way. On the road, when we come to a little area, a little tiny village, there's about 6 canals joined one another. I don't know the name of it. No time to find out. And there was going to be a French soldier on guarding, and spoke English quite well. I said to him, "Which is the road to Dunkirk?" He says, that's the road to Dunkey Harbour. He said, don't go along there. He says, the parachutists have all dropped down there, German parachutists. And to this day, I'm convinced that chap was a German. A big, tall, blonde chap he was, and he said he was French, dressed in French clothes, you know, uniform. Because when we went down this road, there was a big archway onto the main road, to this road we were taking to Dunkirk. And we looked down, we couldn't see anybody, and there was a dry ditch on the left-hand side, so we all run, there were about eight of us, we all run into this dry ditch. We walked along this dry ditch and we never saw a parachute, never had a gun or anything. And to this day I'm convinced it was a German, you know, trying to direct people wrongly. Anyway, when I got to Dunkirk, I was wandering about a bit, and there was a statue in Dunkirk, a big statue, and I sat down against it, and there's some steps up to it. I was sat at the bottom, a real warm, nice warm day it was, and I hadn't been there many minutes, I fell hard fast asleep. I don't know how long I'd been asleep, maybe an hour or so, and somebody was shaking me. And I had my berry on, with my badge, you know, the forward badge. And it was one of the sergeants from another squadron, an air squadron. And he said, come on, he said, I'm gathering you all up. And he had a three-tonner. And all the yeomanry were finding, were taking them to the beach. And I got to the beach with them in a three-tonner. And we made it to the end of a queue. I could see all the boats. This was 29th of May. See all the boats out on the water. And we was in this queue and it was going along to the pier. And eventually we got stuffed and pumped and that. We got along to the pier and there were some lads that were drunk and the sailors who wouldn't let them on. Said, you go back to the end of the queue. Of course, they'd come up the side of the queue and trying to muscle in. And when we got a lot of sort of a great big hole in the pier and they put a plank and a couple of tables across the hole so that people could, you know, soldiers could get along to the end of the pier. And it was a royal daffodil. I got on board and I stripped myself off to, took all my boots off. Took my boots off and had a little bag with me and took my clothing, jacket, it just kept me trousers. And I thought, I'm going to be in a spot where I can go for a swim if need be. Anyway, we arrived at Margate in the Royal Daffodil.
What were conditions like aboard the ship?
Crowded. And I got to a space where I couldn't, I didn't go down below, I kept up on top. I thought if we were going to be bombed, because they were bombing, you know, the planes were coming and bombing while we were loading up. Anyway.
Did you sleep aboard ship?
I dropped off for about half an hour, I think. Anyhow, we arrived at Margate, and a lot of them they got off. They got put into trains. And you know, the people who were, a funny thing about this, at the end of the pier, where we were coming up, there was a soldier there with a big bag. All your ammunition, drop into this bag. dropping the ammunition in one soldier dropped a couple of hand grenades in. And he run, and he left the family just run away because they dropped the, but they were safe, you know, there were pins in them, there wasn't any danger, but he didn't know. Anyway, in Margate, the one and the train, run on the train, so the marchers down to the, not the lorries, we marched on because the lorries was full. So about 20 was marched down to the station. The train was filling up then. Anyhow, there was some, I don't know, Women's Institute, Salvation Army now. But there was some ladies there with sandwiches and cups of tea. And I had a sandwich and a cup of tea. And I finished up a place, I think they called it Witham. You could see, when you was in the town, you could see a white horse on the hillside. Have you any idea where it would be?
Yeah, I remember it, but I don't know where it was.
There is a place called Witham in Essex.
Well, it's down south somewhere. And you know, a sergeant there was taking particulars in the, it was a territorial hall I finished up in, quite a lot of us. I was given blankets to lay on the floor, and I slept for 12 hours. They never bothered you. I slept for 12 hours. And when they started taking all the particulars, he come to me and said I was from the ERY. He said, Yeomanry. Where he would have said, I came from the EYR, East Yorks Regiment. And I insisted, no, I'm a tanky unit. Anyway, eventually I got through to him that I was a tanky unit. And eventually I was sent to Bovington, and I finished up at Bovington.
Which battalion of the East Riding Yeomanry was it?
Battalion, you mean York?
Did it have a number?
Oh, the Yorkshire.
Sea squadron.
It's York's number.
Was there just one regiment?
Oh, no, he was trying to tell me I was infantry. The sergeant would argue I was infantry, and I said, no, I'm a tanky unit.
So you went to Bovington?
And I finished up at Bovington. Eventually, when we all got together again, there was 112 from the Yeomanry had come back through Dunkirk. The rest had been captured. I think there was 400, just over 400 Yeomanry. The rest had been killed. And the mate, he was captured. He was in to Dodsworth. And he finished up in Poland, on a farm in Poland. He was a prisoner of war for 4 or 5 years. And anyway, from Bovington, we started filling up again, What happened? We had a second, you know, first East Riding Yeomanry and the second East Riding Yeomanry. Well, the second East Riding Yeomanry was a lot of 18-year-olds, 17 and 18-year-olds, who were too young to go to France with us in the February of 1940. So they was making it up to full strength from the 2nd East Riding Yeomanry at Bovington. Of course, I was put back into Vierchelung, And after Bovington, do I can't remember where we moved to. We finished up after the training. We finished it up at Rendlesham. There's a big lake, I think, at Rendlesham. We was on this big lake, Candice Big Lake.